Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. It is March, the month of madness for fans of college basketball. Also a big month for Luke Bonner, who played Division I ball and is now an advocate for college players. Luke grew up in Concord shooting hoops with his tall, athletic brother Matt, sister Becky, and his dad, Dave Bonner, a mail carrier. His mother Paula was a teacher and 6'2". Their parents pushed academics over sports, but drove thousands of miles and spent countless dollars to support the kids' dreams of getting an athletic scholarship to a good school. Now Matt plays for an NBA team, the San Antonio Spurs. Becky is an NBA rep who conducts basketball clinics in the U.S. and abroad. Luke now works in sports marketing and is co-founder of the College Athletes Players Association, one of the organizations challenging powerful and lucrative college athletics to expand the rights of players. Luke wrote about the hard work and punishing expectations on NCAA athletes for vice. It is an issue we hear a lot about, but rare that we get to hear it from someone who's been through it, especially someone local. And with that, Luke Bonner, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So you went to a prestigious university on an athletic scholarship, right? That's something that people dream of, yet you found the reality quite different. How?
Well, certainly it was, you know, in a sense, a dream come true. But I kind of bring a broader perspective. Out of high school in New Hampshire, I went and played Big East basketball at West Virginia University. And I ended up transferring, you know, back to New England and finished up at UMass. My brother played high-level Division I ball at Florida, and my sister also played high-level basketball at Stanford and Boston University. So just leading up to that, I kind of saw what they went through. And, you know, when you're growing up and you want to play, you know, big time college basketball, what you see is these sold out arenas, you know, the guys on TV, you get a so-called free ride, which is a total myth. And the reality is, you know, when you're there, you're putting in 40 hours a week on top of your academic schedule. I'm doing a lot of work. I had no idea, like, my insurance, if I got hurt on the court, that's my parents' insurance covering that stuff. There's a lot of really basic, you know, things that you would think would be covered in this multi-billion dollar industry for the players, but there's really, you know, not much for them.
Well, this isn't the first time that we've heard that students are kind of at the mercy of the NCAA or other non-professional organizations of sport. So how are some of the ways that you've actually seen that play out?
So as a player, you're subjected to, you know, a 300 plus page NCAA rule book that, as you know, the player, you have literally zero say in what these policies are, and they dominate your life. So, you know, an example of that, my brother was a, you know, All-American high school player, and he went on one of his five full expenses paid official visits. And we went out to the Outback Steakhouse, and he's a big guy, 6'9", you know, 240 plus pounds, and you got to put on a lot of weight to, you know, play basketball. And when we got back, the compliance office at the school called us and said that they were concerned that the NCAA wouldn't believe that he ate as much food as he did at the Outback. And so they sent a bill to my parents and, you know, made us pay this bill back. And, you know, it's pretty insane when you consider what's going on here when he goes to his college and, you know, he's playing in front of 14,000 plus paying, you know, ticketed customers every night on national TV, all sorts of marketing stuff going on.
Well, and now you're working with student athletes in an advocacy capacity, and some of the students actually live on food stamps.
Yeah, so when I was in college, I have a lot of friends, you know, throughout all my playing years at different universities. School's much higher profile than the one I played at. And when the cafeteria shuts down during winter break or whatever, and you're still on campus, you know, the schools are putting kids on food stamps. You know, these are players who have really high, if you look at the economics of it, really high market values. So you're essentially, through all these restrictions, turning potential makers into takers. And that's taxpayer money going to that. And it just doesn't really make sense. And a lot of the programs also rely on, you know, federally funded Pell Grants as a way for these players to get by. When I was in school, me and my brother wanted to start a charity concert series. I can't have my name anywhere near it because I, as a college athlete, you're sacrificing your name, image, and likeness 100% to the NCAA. So we're doing this concert. I can't sell sponsorships. I can't get reimbursed for anything I do. There's just all these ridiculous rules, and I just never really understood why. So I discovered an organization back then that was a nonprofit player advocacy group called the National Collegiate Players Association, and I started doing research for them. And we developed, you know, a student athlete bill of rights. We did, we were doing everything we can. This is for years and years and years now. Currently, really, the only way to change anything for the NCAA is through the courtrooms or through, you know, intense political pressure and legislation. It's not a very fast-moving prospect. And if you just see from the day that Northwestern, you know, unionized or tried to unionize, the amount of changes that took place from then till now are, you know, drastic. It's made, been a drastic difference. And so I think that players need to see that and realize that it needs to go even further.
So to give us some sense of perspective, I mean, you couldn't use your own name or likeness for, you know, financial gain for a charity. But what kind of money are college sports organizations making off of these players?
It's a multi-billion dollar industry, especially when you look at the high revenue generating sports of football and basketball. Third party companies are making tons of money. You know, March Madness alone has a $1 billion TV deal with CBS. Like that, it's an insane amount of money. So the money basically goes to everyone but the players. For example, my coach, when I was at UMass, left the summer that I was going to my senior year to sign a $3 million contract at another university, and he had a $10 million buyout on that. This is a lot of money. That's life-changing money. But yeah, it's going to robust athletic department staffs, like a lot of staff, different coaches, facilities are, you know, getting really out of hand. But it's, you know, it's kind of the nature of the sports world. To your fans, you need to look like you're doing everything you can to win. So you need to spend all that money. So most of these universities are going to say like, hey, we're losing money on sports, but are you really, and is it really just a spending problem that you have? You know, does your school really need a new $30 million, you know, basketball facility, or could it be, you know, a $10 million facility and $20 million to help with, you know, workers' comp and provide insurance and, you know, do exit visits with a doctor for your football players and cover regular checkups every 5 years to, you know, monitor their brain and everything.
What does it take to be a Division I athlete? Well, Luke Bonner is with us. He wrote about his experience for Vice. It takes a lot of work. There are a lot of rules, and there's a lot of fear of losing your standing and very little in the way of protection or rights for student athletes. Now, there's a lot of fear here on the part of the players to complain about this. You know, you worried about if you were criticizing the system, it would reflect badly on your team or your coaches. Your parents had two other kids coming up in the side of the system and, you know, didn't want to complain about paying that Outback Steakhouse bill. Players in general seem too afraid to speak up. Do you think they have rights that they may not be aware of, or are those rights just not extended to them?
I mean, sadly, there's really no legitimate outlet for them to have any rights. Until there's a legitimate players association, there isn't. It's only through, you know, like I said, the courtrooms or political pressure. That being said, you have a voice. As an athlete, you're the product and the labor driving this multi-billion dollar industry. And you have a lot more power than you realize. And it's really hard to understand the power structure at play unless you've been in it. And the promise of, you know, every college basketball player thinks they're going to make the NBA and make $1 million. So why would you put that at risk? Reality is you're not. Like, a few of you are. And this is, you know, a time of, like, your most relevance, I guess. And you can learn a lot by, like, you know, doing business and figuring out how to, you know, to operate some of these things.
Well, last summer, this did go to court. The National Labor Relations Board did overturn a decision to allow football players to unionize at Northwestern. You know, high school athletes and potential college athletes. Would that realistically diminish the drive of any student athlete? I mean, is anyone going to say, no, you know, I'm not going to take the athletic scholarship. It's I don't have enough rights.
No, you can't, because there's no alternative. Take me, for example. When I was in sixth grade, I was a 6-foot tall kid, you know, size 17 shoe. my brother and sister were already being recruited by, you know, every coach in the country. We'd be at the Concord YMCA, and Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski and Billy Donovan would be there on a daily basis.
I don't know who they are.
But the prospect of, you know, getting seen by these coaches, you need to travel in the summer. You need to go to tournaments and All-American camps, and it's expensive. And, you know, my family couldn't really afford that for three kids. So my parents had a very real conversation with me at, you know, 12 years old. If you want to pursue, you know, basketball, it's an expensive hobby. And, like, if you're going to go to college, like, this is your chance to go to college and pay for that. Mm-hmm. So at 12 years old, you know, I'm already, like, thinking about how am I going to go to college? And basketball was the route for me. Mm. Obviously, it helps that I'm 7 feet tall. When people who meet this with a level of apathy, you know, will say, if it's so bad, why don't you go to, you know, Europe or China or go to the NBA and make all the money you want? But I think we can do better than, you know, if you don't like it, leave our country.
Well, you brought up a couple things. You brought up economics for one thing. You really have to, you know, be in the comfortable middle class, it sounds like, to be on a travel team anyway. And there's also a racial dimension. At the University of Missouri, the football players showed how much power they had when dozens of African Americans on their team threatened not to play unless the president resigned. Now, this was in response to a number of Black Lives Matter or associated protests at the school. He resigned. Now, why did it work there at the University of Missouri, yet other players feel like they have no power?
Honestly, I think my perception is money. If they don't play a game over a weekend, there's a lot of money involved in what they're doing. And they're the most visible, you know, faces on the campus at that time. So for them to stand up really, to me, illustrated the power of these players if they are to come together in some sort of organized manner.
So what would it take for the NCAA to organize similarly?
That's a great question. It's going to take former players speaking out and realizing it's okay to talk about your experience in an honest manner. Even what I've written, I don't think there's anything remarkable about it. And the second I posted that, you have to understand how much power these universities have over you. When that thing got published, I was literally sitting in the corner of my office, like shaking, scared how this is going to...
You mean your article advice? I wondered about that.
Scared how this is going to be received. Am I going to be just completely alienated from my alma mater? And I'm not complaining about, like, anything that crazy. The reality is the response is overwhelming. My department that I studied invited me to talk to the students there. I even had, you know, past associate athletic directors reach out, like, it's really well thought out, like, supporting me. Because a lot of stuff is really common sense and just, like, you know, common decency even when you're talking about the amount of money involved in these sports. So I think it's really just empowering these players to educate them on what's kind of going on around them. And just making them understand that they have power. Sadly, with the Missouri stuff even, they tried to draft state legislation after that. That would give, you know, the university the power to strip players of their scholarships if they were to boycott. And that ended up getting a lot of huge, you know, mm-hmm. blowback and didn't happen. But if you look at how the university leadership talks now even, there's stuff being said that's really dangerous in terms of that. And about how they demand that their student athletes be socially responsible and they need to show up to practice in games or else run the risk of losing their scholarship. And some might argue how those players acted, you know, that was incredibly socially responsible.
Your brother, Matt, he went through this, you know. Now he's an NBA player. You know, I've seen the videos. He lives with all the trappings. He's got a great house, a great career, great wife. You know, all the things that he might have dreamed of as a high school or middle school player. Would he say it's worth it?
Yeah. I mean, it's the only way that as kids we could see that you would, you know, be able to go to college. And all the cliche stuff you hear about being on a sports team, they ring true, yes. But you look at my family, we are absolutely the poster of NCAA success. Bring us to the convention, which they moved to D.C. so they could lobby from Indianapolis recently. We are NCAA poster success, and my entire family, just 100%, there needs to be a Players Association. So I think if that doesn't illustrate what's really happening behind the curtain, then nothing does.
Well, Luke Bonner, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Luke Bonner, he's a sports and entertainment marketer for GYK Antler. We were talking today about his article for Vice magazine, which created quite a stir. It's called What I Paid to Be a Division I Athlete. We have a link for you to read it at wordofmouthradio.org.